to have the numbers in front of you when you sit down with a player or a coach, it's helpful because perceptions can easily be called out as biased or, you know, or BS. But when you have the data in front of you, you know, it produces a much more balanced conversation and discussion.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level. On the line today is Ed Lippe. Ed works as a senior performance advisor for AS Roma and is also director of health and fitness at Raptor Capital Management. Among the topics Ed will discuss are the value of infrastructure in performance departments, the role of connected technology, and the links between high performance in business and sports. So let's get started. Here's your host, head of First Beat Sports USA, Benjamin Jensen.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this 10th edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast. Ed, thanks for being here. And as always, we like to start by asking our guests to give us an idea of kind of their career background. I know you've taken a bit more unconventional route getting to where you are, but can you give us a little snapshot of kind of where you started and how you ended up here?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thank you very much for asking me to be on the podcast. I'm a frequent listener, so it's a pleasure to be on. In terms of my background, by trade and training, I'm a strength and conditioning coach. I started my career in strength and conditioning in 1998 at one of the first private performance enhancement facilities in North America under the tutelage of Michael Boyle. And it was there where I cut my teeth as a coach, working with athletes of all ages and abilities, from Olympians and professionals in the NHL, NFL, NBA, MLS, MLB, and PGA, to high school kids hoping to earn a spot on their varsity teams. And it was actually the latter group that taught me the most about how to be a good coach. I learned that working with elite athletes can be easy if you approach it the right way. I mean, you essentially demonstrate an exercise, provide a simple cue, and then they replicate the same movement, but typically with more power. And, you know, versus coaching athletes with low to no training age and teaching them the fundamentals of movement can be challenging. And it requires you to develop a variety of teaching strategies that accommodates different styles, different rates of learning, and having that full spectrum experience early in my career was a real blessing. From Mike Boyle Strength and Conditioning, I moved to corporate fitness, where I was asked to develop a corporate athlete training program for a Boston-based investment fund. And it just so happened that that investment fund ended up purchasing AS Roma in 2011. And I was initially asked to co-conduct an audit with Brian Dew from the Boston Celtics on the AS Roma performance apparatus. And the recommendations that came out of that audit led me to my full-time work with the club from 2015 to 2018, and where I still advise on performance-related issues.
Okay, very cool. And I didn't realize you were from the Mike Boyle coaching tree. That's quite the extended tree there.
It is. Yeah. Mike is, you know, his legacy as a influencer and coach extends far and wide in our industry. And I'm proud to be a small part of that legacy.
All right. And it sounds like your role with Roma has changed, obviously, as you mentioned, from more regular player contact to taking a bigger picture position. Kind of what are your main priorities or points of emphasis right now with Roma?
Well, yeah, in that advisory role that I mentioned at the outset, right now I'm focused on maintaining and refining the framework and process that we've developed over the last 4 to 5 years, specifically focusing on personnel and technological infrastructure and providing a more like a slower, more strategic thinking perspective that can be difficult to find in the high-pressure daily environment produced in pro sports teams.
Okay, and you've spoken previously about the importance of infrastructure, especially in the modern era of pro sports where things can change quickly. What did you mean by that?
Establishing an infrastructure or framework is such a critical component to sustain success. What I mean by that is understanding the needs of your athletes and reverse engineering an evidence-based process that will allow them to perform at their best. For us, that meant implementing a screening system that provided us with an athlete-centric roadmap for each individual player, a monitoring system that alerted us to where each player stood on the fitness, freshness, and recovery spectrum, and a daily workflow to keep it all cohesive and repeatable, so we didn't feel as if we were reinventing the wheel every time we walked through the doors of the training facility. I'd just like to make a quick clarification on the term I use, evidence-based, which I think has gotten a bad rap in some circles. For me, evidence-based can mean incorporating the findings of the latest peer-reviewed study on hamstring injuries, but it can also mean using the progressive resistance strength training protocol that has provided you with positive anecdotal evidence for years. So to me, evidence does not necessarily always need to be validated by science, but can be used if it is justified by your own thought process. So as long as you know the why for using it and how it fits into your bigger picture, then I think that for me, that qualifies as evidence-based.
So besides the science, obviously, with the peer-reviewed journal, so it's kind of like the practical application, even going all the way back to, you know, your time with Mike Boyle, the stuff that you used and worked then would still be work now and would be evidence-based because you've used that in the field for so long.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, what we're trying to find the happy medium between practitioner-based experience and, you know, what we're learning from research and some of the objective measures that we get back from the technology that we use. So yeah, I think it would certainly be silly to discredit the things that we've learned through practice and what we can see with our own eyes day in and day out working with our athletes. That's such an important part of what we do as coaches is actually working with the athletes and then always monitoring them with our own eyes and identifying what works and what doesn't.
So there's definitely a balancing act there, isn't it? I mean, like you just said, we've got the eye test, what's worked for a long time, and then still got to stay up to date with peer-reviewed journals, what's coming out and what's new.
Absolutely. And I think you've often hear about not just strength and conditioning and performance enhancement, but I think a lot of different disciplines fall into this category where you hear about, you know, the art and science of something. And I think that certainly holds true in our industry, whereas the art of coaching and then the science of coaching, you know, I think we need to be cognizant of both of those elements.
Definitely. So kind of on this same subject, what would you say are kind of the key foundation elements of a successful performance department? Because you've obviously been involved with different departments where you've been at.
By recognizing the importance of complex systems thinking, I think it's one thing to build out the components and add them to your process. It's another thing entirely to understand how each component needs to interact with all the other pieces in your ecosystem to produce successful outcomes. I know this because it's something I think we failed to fully appreciate during my first full season at Roma. We were busy adding this or that, but failed to stop and think about how each piece we added would affect the other pieces that were already in place and or the pieces that we would eventually want to incorporate. This often came down to properly communicating with and managing the expectations of our technical staff.
Okay, and what role actually did the technology play in all of that?
Well, technology has obviously assumed a prominent place at the sports performance table over the last 10 to 15 years. And the screening and monitoring I spoke of earlier can be done with and without technology, but certainly the technology makes it a lot easier to objectify metrics when necessary.
Okay, excellent. And while we're on the tech side here, I just wanted to touch on, we recently got our API up and running with Kitman Labs, which I know is running at Roma. You know, how has that been working out?
It's been working out great. I mean, anytime you can automate the flow of data, so it reduces the difficulty of your day-to-day workflow. And when you boot the system up and everything is right there and it's fully automated. As coaches and practitioners, we've got a lot to do throughout the day. So the more you can automate, you know, the easier it makes your life and it gives you a better overall data landscape to review each day.
And if we stay on the subject, they're getting a lot of data points at Roma, whether, you know, obviously with a first beat, internal load, external load, not sure what other programs you have, but some of our previous guests have spoken about, you know, kind of finding the signal within the noise when it comes to the amount of data. Is there kind of a list of things that a technology or a solution kind of must have to work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, technology must check the following boxes. The first, I would say, it needs to solve a problem. I feel as if some sports tech products or services are in search of a problem instead of the other way around. I seem to quote David Epstein, the author of The Sports Gene and Range, quite a bit, but I once heard him say that we have a tendency to make something important because we can measure it instead of measuring something because it's important. I think that's something that we need to have in mind whenever we evaluate sports technology. The second box is it's got to be easy to use with a relatively low learning curve. I mean, practitioners are just too busy to be taking hours and hours out of their workday to play around with things or deal with glitchy products. You know, and I think a strong onboarding process and support team can certainly help a lot with that. And then the third box is it's got to be reliable. When you turn it on, it's got to be ready to go. It's got to consistently, you know, hopefully in an automated way, populate whatever dashboards you're using. And it's got to be up and ready to go whenever you need it.
Yeah, I think that second point you made was a really good one that I've seen it so much more where maybe the first few years, you know, there's a lot of people using some really complicated systems and they just kind of accepted it. That's the way it was, you know, tons of data, spending hour or even two a day with Excel pulling data in. But I've definitely seen a switch now that if it's not practical, they're going to go with something else. They're not going to spend that extra hour, 2 hours a day just to pull the data in that they could show to the coach.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think if you visited training facilities all around the world, I think you'd probably find quite a bit of sports tech in the corners and the closets that have been cast aside, mainly because they were just too difficult to use or they weren't reliable or, you know, it was, you know, for a combination of those reasons, you just see a lot of products that just fail to get incorporated into the day-to-day workflows of practitioners at clubs or sporting organizations. And, you know, for a lot of clubs, those can be expensive mistakes because, you know, some of these technology products are not inexpensive. So, you know, if you make too many mistakes, I'm sure you're going to have front office management saying, hey, are you using this stuff? Because it's not inexpensive.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen, you know, I've been to some teams where, you know, I'm seeing that system that I know they dropped 50,000 on just the year or two before just gathering dust. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're talking about some of the teams with more resources, okay, they can afford to make some of those mistakes. But when you're talking about clubs that are working off of a smaller budget, you really need to reduce and or totally eliminate those types of mistakes.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Okay, let's go ahead and hop on the quick fire round. So I'm just going to fire some quick questions and let you answer.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, your sporting hero growing up?
Walter Payton, Sweetness.
Guilty music pleasure?
I think that'd have to be both Justins, Justin Timberlake and Justin Bieber.
Okay, excellent. I did not see that coming, but... Oh, yeah, and sorry, I got to go back to the first question, Walter Payton. So you're still a Payton fan even after seeing the Super Bowl shuffle. I just need to confirm.
Yeah, actually, it's you know, probably not one of the greatest moments of his career, any of those Chicago Bears. You know, I think back to that Super Bowl and think one of the worst decisions Mike Ditka ever made was handing the ball off to the fridge and not allowing Walter Payton to score a touchdown in his only Super Bowl appearance.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Well, at least the video provided us some pretty good entertainment. Huh?
Yeah, no question.
All right, I'll get back to it. Best game you've been involved in?
The 2018 Champions League quarterfinal match versus Barcelona, Estadio Olimpico. We lost the first leg match away 4-1. So to go through to the semifinals, the most probable second leg scoreline needed to be 3-0, which is exactly what we got in dramatic fashion. And just the way that game unfolded in terms of like Edin Dzeko scoring a goal in the first 5 minutes and then Daniele De Rossi scoring on a penalty about 10 minutes into the second half, and then what ended up being the winner, a header off of the head of Kostas Spanoulis in the 82nd minute, and then just hanging on in the last 10, 12 dramatic minutes. It was just an incredible sporting experience. And then to be able to go through against all odds to the semifinal where we played Liverpool, it was pretty special.
Wow. I bet it would have been interesting to see what your stats were if you had a first beat belt on for that game, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It would have been, I definitely would have been, I think, in the 120s throughout the entire match. Maybe higher in the last 10 minutes.
I was going to say, maybe you worked up a 200 trip just from watching, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Favorite TV show?
Seinfeld.
Biggest mentor in career to date?
Yeah, I mentioned it before, Michael Boyle.
Italian or American food?
Italian, but I need to make a distinction. Real Italian food, I mean, having lived in Italy for 3 years, I know the difference between real Italian food and kind of the Americanized version of Italian food. So I would say Italian, but with the caveat that it's real Italian food and not what you typically get in the U.S.
So basically you're saying Italian, not Olive Garden, correct?
Correct.
All right. Biggest fear?
Probably heights.
I'm there with you. Let's see. If you could have been a pro in one sport, what would it be?
You know, I think I answer this question differently today than I would have 15 years ago. I grew up playing American football, and I played American football all the way through college. And so I think 15 years ago, I probably would have answered American football. But I've got a good friend who is one of the leading researchers in CTE and the devastating results that concussions can have on athletes later in life. And so based on that information, I think I would go with soccer.
All right. And a chosen superpower.
If I could absorb the superpowers of any superhero, it would be Jean Grey from Marvel's X-Men, because she has both telekinesis and telepathy. But if I had to choose just between one of those two, I guess I would go with telekinesis.
I can see you put some thought into that.
I have a 15-year-old son, and he and I are both into especially the Marvel movies. Those are the types of conversations we have all the time.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Flipping over to First Beat a little bit. So you were instrumental in getting First Beat set up at Roma. What were your reasons for introducing the system?
Initially, we brought it in to assist our return to play process. We were looking to get some objective internal metrics from injured players so we could make sure they were demonstrably fit before rejoining the team. You know, when a coach asks if a player is fit enough to return to training, and we said yes, we wanted to have the data to back up that answer. And then the hope was that, you know, if we successfully integrated First Beat with the injured players, then that would lead to a full integration with the entire squad.
Okay, so kind of from year one to this is basically year four, how's it used with the Roma staff, and especially with so many coaching changes, how has that worked out?
Yeah, well, so like I mentioned, the hope was as we integrated it with injured guys that eventually, you know, we could demonstrate to our coaching staff that it was an important aspect of what we were doing, at least in the return to play process, and that it would have important applications to what we were doing with the entire squad. So I'm happy to say that today that transformation has happened, that full integration has happened. So now, you know, we have the full squad wearing First Beat belts and we do the live monitoring throughout the session. So we use it with the entire squad now. And, you know, one of the ways in which we use it is to customize training load for individual players, which is something that we've always been very keen on doing, but was difficult to do prior to having First Beat being used with the entire team. It shouldn't go without saying, too, that you need to have the right partnership with your technical staff, because we're at a kind of a point in the arc of professional sports where you have some coaches who are still not fully bought into the use of technology. And while you have some other usually younger coaches that see the value in it. And so we're very fortunate that our current coach sees a tremendous amount of value in objective data. And so we've developed a great partnership with Coach Fonseca and his staff on how we integrate different technologies and use objective data.
That sounds like a pretty smart kind of way to introduce that instead of all at once, everybody has to do this. This is what we're doing, you know, with the EPL players, bringing it in on to do some of the, like you said, return to play protocol and then just gradually getting it on the whole team. Sounds like it worked out pretty well.
It did. I mean, we wanted to, you know, you need to control what you can control at first, right? In terms of we're fully in charge of return to play. When you talk about the entire squad, okay, now that's a give and take with the technical staff. And so we felt like if we came out of the gate saying, you know, we really feel strong that everyone's got to do it, we probably would have gotten some pushback, especially, you know, given who the coaches were at the time we were kind of rolling this out. But if we can point to how we used it and have some success with it, now all of a sudden you've got a more receptive audience because you have a track record of how successfully it's been used.
And looking at the wider industry, while we're kind of on the topic here of internal load, seems a lot more people are starting to appreciate the internal load data. Why do you think that's so important?
Well, kind of touching on what I just said, for us, it's important for phenotyping, which is just a fancy way of saying we use it as a tool to create individual profiles for players. And based on those profiles, we customize training load for players. So I often use the analogy kind of between workhorses and racehorses. And each type of horse needs a different training volume and intensity to optimize their output on match day. And so that's one of the ways in which we use First Beat is to identify kind of what the optimal training load is for each player. And then because we have the live monitoring going for training sessions, we can say, okay, you know, this player has kind of hit it. And it's not like you blow a whistle and pull the guy off. But, you know, during the next water break, you go over to the coach and say, hey, just so you know, we're kind of at the intended volume and intensity that we're hoping for this particular player. Or when this training session is getting close to ending, you can go to the same coach and say, hey, you know what, we're falling a little short for players X, Y, and Z. We have some prepared runs ready for them so we can get to the metrics we wanted to or we were hoping for this session. You know, that's difficult to do without objective measures. It's been really helpful in both of those ways.
Excellent. Now, you already touched kind of on the buy-in from coaches. What about the players? Really resistance from the players, or have they been pretty good about using the First Beat system?
You know, as you know, players don't like to wear anything that they don't have to. Overall, so much of it depends on how it's communicated and the coaching staff that you're working with. And, you know, luckily, we've got a really good group of players who are very interested in improvement. And I think because we've integrated certain technologies, you know, at the risk of sounding immodest, kind of a thoughtful progression, they start to understand kind of like the bigger end game, the bigger end goal. And so they start to see it all come together. And because, you know, we can sit down with them and use the data to have conversations, they start to understand the value of it. And once they understand the value of it and why we're using it, we're just not using it because, you know, we want to hook guys up to things, then usually the buy-in comes after that.
Yeah, you said the word that I think almost every single coach that we've had on here has said is conversations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, got to have those conversations or it opens up conversations with players you might not have been able to address before. Very interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, oftentimes the objective data that you collect just confirms what you already see. Mm-hmm. But to have the numbers in front of you when you sit down with a player or a coach, it's helpful because perceptions can easily be called out as biased or, you know, or BS. But when you have the data in front of you, you know, it produces a much more balanced conversation and discussion.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot of people, it's a real relief when what their eye was telling them actually was validated from the data.
Right, exactly. And once you get those players sitting down talking about that data, sometimes that's all you need. It becomes a platform. And then sometimes that conversation kind of veers off into, you know, other equally productive topics like lifestyle choices that could be affecting the way in which they recovered, et cetera. Once you create that basis for feedback and communication, it opens up channels that you may not have otherwise thought were necessary.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I kind of want to get into how you've applied First Beat into the private sector. Mm-hmm. So after a few years in Rome, you hopped back over the pond, set up shop in Boston. Mm-hmm. First off, is it good to be back home or are you missing the Italian lifestyle?
Yeah. You know, on balance, it's always nice to be home because, you know, home is home. But there are certainly lots of things that I miss about living in Italy and Rome specifically. And, you know, working with the team every day was a lot of fun. You know, not just the players, but in terms of the staff, just a really great group of guys. So there are certainly things that I miss about working in the team environment and working in Rome because it's such a unique, wonderful city. But like I say, it's, you know, home is home and it's certainly more comfortable to be home in many ways. But thanks. It's good to be back in Boston.
Good. All right. Something unique about your work outside of the pro sports is now your work with Raptor Capital Management. Can you dive in a little bit and just tell us what you're doing with them?
Yeah. So I mentioned my work in corporate fitness during the answer about my background. So in addition to continuing to advise Roma, you know, I've returned to the corporate world. I work out of the Raptor headquarters in Boston. And when I came back, I brought back some of the technologies that I'd become familiar with at Roma. And so, you know, First Beat was one of those. And what I was looking to do was create, kind of enhance the corporate program that I had built in previous years before I left for Rome, kind of enhancing that with the technologies I had become familiar with while in Rome. And at the same time, creating more of a kind of a virtual fitness experience for people. So between, you know, an online, a cloud-based programming software that I use and First Beat, I've created this kind of corporate fitness experience for our employees here at Raptor, where, you know, they can work out here at the Raptor gym, which we're lucky enough to have here in a Boston headquarters. But, you know, they can go to their local gym. If they're traveling in a hotel gym across the world, they've got their program that's delivered by a mobile app. They can use, you know, if they've got their First Beat belt, they can, you know, strap up, hook onto the mobile First Beat app. And I get feedback both on their program as well as the First Beat reports. I've been able to create this kind of virtual fitness experience for our employees here, and it's worked out really well.
Oh, very cool. There's got to be some similarities between the pro sports and the high-end private sector work because they're both such highly stressful environments. Are there any similarities you might see with your clients and the athletes?
I guess I see similarities in successful people, no matter what domain they choose to work in. So I would say one of the primary common denominators is showing up every day with the desire to be a little bit better than they were the day before. And to kind of reject the notion of the grind and reframe it as just part of your process and your life's journey. I think those are the two biggest common denominators.
For sure. Well, that'll just about do it for our time today. Thanks again, Ed, for joining us today. I know our listeners are going to agree that this has been really insightful.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you like this episode and want to hear more episodes, make sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533. Or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.